You're listening to DottoTech, helping you get the most out of your technology wherever you use it, at home, at school, or at work. Brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. 20 years, the trusted voice of technology in Canada, Steve Dotto.
Hello and welcome to DottoTech. I am Steve Dotto, and we are ever so glad that you are joining us this fine Wednesday in the city of Vancouver. Art Factora is with me, as is John Beeler. How are we doing, Art?
I'm well. I'm tired. I wish I could be taking advantage of the sun more often this summer, because we've had a great stretch. I got these comedy competitions. I'm here working with you. I'm not complaining. I'm just saying I wish there was sunshine in the middle of the night.
Oh, okay, because you're turning day into night, aren't you?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, that's
a... Sleep during the day.
But you're a young man. You should be able to get up and rise with the sun as well.
I should be, but I also have that gene they refer to as lazy. So that's kind of impeding the waking up early after going to bed late. Sorry.
John Beeler also sitting in. How are you keeping, John?
I'm excellent.
John, of course, just opened our eyes to a whole different world, the world of 3D printing. A few weeks ago, and he's back. He's back for return engagement because he does so much more. So I'm glad you came in and to join us today. A little bit later, also, we're going to be talking about mommy blogging. Have you followed any of the mommy blogging, Art?
Let's see. I don't know any names. I mean, I know that I've come across a number of mommy blogs.
It's huge.
I know.
Mommy blogging is huge. There's like nearly 4 million. Mommy bloggers in the United States,
well,
or in North America.
How many new mothers or mothers of young children can't talk about their kids? Imagine being able to talk about your kids without actually having to be face-to-face with these people. They would love it.
Yes, they're all over. But we're going to be talking about the phenomenon of mommy blogging with Aviva Rubin, a Toronto-based writer who's just done a really nice piece for the Globe and Mail. And then when we're done with that piece, we'll come back and we'll talk about...
Daddy blogging?
Well, you know, there is...
There's one blog in all of North America of daddy bloggers.
No, there actually is an increasing number of them, but they're kind of Me Toos. But it's fathers, stay-at-home dads, that sort of thing, talking. And they're kind of mommy blogger wannabes, I think, for the most part. Although I'm sure that some tools slip in, as opposed to just
right. Recipes
and formulas and...
Sports.
And good places to go.
Sports analogies.
Yeah, there should be the odd... Should be the odd sports thing, should be the odd tool thing, should be the odd, you know, I don't know. I don't know what else guys talk about.
Beer. They talk about beer.
Beer.
And other women.
And barbecue. There's probably some barbecuing in there
yes. As
well. The summer is treating you well. How's the comedy festival going, Art? Because I do have to ask, because you're in week two now of your big playoffs for the comedy festival.
Yeah, it's, well, 7 weeks. We're in week six.
Two weeks to go. That's right.
Yeah, the People's Champ comedy competition. And so we found our four that are moving on to the finals from week one. There's four out of the 10 that are going to move on from this week. And this week we've got a big show at the Edgewater Casino at the Old Plaza of Nations, and then Saturday at the Rio, and then the same thing next Friday at the Edgewater, and Saturday at the Rio. So next Friday, August 25th, somebody is going to be walking away with $20,000.
Well, this week, you invited me last week for Friday night, and I wasn't able to make it, but we are going to make it this week.
Yes!
On Friday night. Do you want to come to the Comedy Festival Friday night? You could blog about it.
I could.
Or live tweet about it.
Yeah.
We've actually incorporated a lot of social media, or tried to, into the shows. Our hashtag is PMPC2012, and we're asking people to take pictures and live blog or live tweet about the shows.
Are you giving them anything if they do it? Are you randomly picking somebody
them? We've got a beer sponsor, a water sponsor. So we say that anyone who tweets, follows our sponsors, has a chance to win...
a bottle of water.
Liquid.
Liquid.
Alcoholic or non-alcoholic liquid. And also Caribou Brewing, one of our big sponsors, is also donating longboards and bikes. So
can you live heckle?
You can't. Well, you can live tweet heckle, like tweet heckling. As long as nobody can hear it, it's fine. You can tweet heckle.
Is that
heckle
twickling?
Twickling, yes.
Twickling?
Could be a new thing.
Is that a thing?
I don't know.
I wonder if people are going to start noticing that. If, you know, this guy really sucks or this guy's awesome. You know, there should be like a tweet index. You should have like a live tweet. If you have the hashtag happening, Art.
Well, that happens at conferences
all the
time.
I'm just thinking outside the board. Yeah, you'll see the tweets rolling up on the side of the board. You got to think about that for the next time you do it.
After I do a show at one of the bigger clubs, I always check and see if anyone has tweeted like to the club, because Laugh Lines or Comedy Mix or Yuck Yucks all have Twitter accounts. So then I check and search and see if anyone had talked about the show to see if they talked about me either in a positive or negative way. And so far,
but think about having a projector with a feed that's just showing the Twitter feed for your hashtag. That's as it's going along. That would be scary, I think, for the comedians.
Absolutely.
But it would also
be very distracting.
Yeah, it could be, but the best guys could probably handle it, cuz you got to be able to handle heckling. So why not do digital heckling?
This is the future.
This is the future.
We are creating the future of comedy right here.
And
on
it's
the show.
Not necessarily better than the way it is today, is it?
It's different.
It is.
Is anything better? No, it's just different.
Ah, yeah, it's different. Speaking of different, I guess, you know, we haven't talked yet about the upcoming in September Apple. The rumors are starting to coalesce that the iPhone 5 is indeed. Apple's doing not quite as good a job this time, I think, of keeping the rumor mill down. Rumor is we're going to be seeing the iPhone 5 in September. Are you excited about that, John?
I'm always excited about new smartphone technology.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not so fond of the period of time between roughly about now and the presumed launch date, and that's the rumor mill grinding out everything. And there was a really great story that happened this week where somebody got this idea, let's fake a news item related to Apple,
mm-hmm.
plant it in the right places. In this case, it was just a comment on Reddit.
Okay.
And basically it was like, I'm going to leave this here and see what happens. And what they had done is they had created in a 3D drawing program an asymmetrical screw that apparently was Apple's new way of combating people opening up their devices. It sounds totally ridiculous. And the illustration looked plausible and everybody lapped it up. All the news outlets ran with it. And so, I mean, that's exactly why I hate the whole rumor stuff, is because, you know, it's not real until they actually announce it. And Apple is pretty good at keeping secrets. It's typically their suppliers that leak out stuff. And there's a whole pile of photos of what the proposed motherboard, case, camera, all that stuff looks like. But this little asymmetrical screw story was great because it really just showed all of the big Apple sites totally fell for this hook, line, and sinker.
Well, when I think about what Apple's going to have to do in the new phone, rather than following what the rumor mill is saying and what's going to be in it, I look at what's out there and what I've got with my phones and think about what Apple has to do to keep up, not to pull ahead like they always have been, but just to keep up. And I think the competition from the Samsung Galaxy 3S, really, that's the one that sets the bar. And I look at my iPhone and I look at the Samsung Galaxy 3S, and I always feel when I go back to my iPhone that I'm kind of the poor country bumpkin now. It seems very small.
Yeah.
The screen seems very, very limited compared to that Samsung.
But are you willing to give up that extra pocket space for that bigger screen and potentially battery life issues with having to power that bigger screen?
Well, you know, battery life has become the point that you don't even think about, you know, getting a full day out of your smartphone anymore. I don't know if you plan on getting a full day. I never plan on a full day.
I'm one of those guys that in my bag right now, I have a Mophie juice pack that sort of as a backup in case I need it. I have cords in my car, and every place I spend most of my time, like at work, I have a charge cable. So
yeah.
I'm always the prepared guy.
You're always charging, yeah.
And I'm always the guy that's loaning out the little battery modules to friends that don't seem to plan well.
Yes, and later on today we'll be talking about another charging device, which is too cool for school. So yeah, so that is a good question, but I do think that when the push comes to shove at purchase, people aren't thinking about their pocket space. They aren't thinking about battery life. When you go into the store and you're looking, or when you're looking at the specs, you're looking at wow, pizzazz, big screen, you're looking at fast, you're looking at sleek, you're looking at those issues as being, or you're looking at some killer app like Siri was last time.
Well, the thing for me, when I had the 4, the 4S came out, and the biggest reason for me to upgrade was the fact that it had a much improved camera.
Yes.
One of the things, I'm a photographer, as you know, and the best camera is the one you always have with you. And I take my phone with me everywhere. I shoot thousands of photos with it, probably a month, actually. And the fact that it's basically replaced the need for a compact camera altogether is huge for me. And the fact that you have, you know, the 3G connectivity and all that type of stuff, right? So that for me was the killer reason to upgrade. And the nice thing is most people, when something they don't always realize is if you have a 4 or a 4S, you can sell that for pretty close to the cost of what it's going to cost you to upgrade. So you're basically just renting the phone from Apple or your carrier at any given time anyways. So the whole cost of upgrading, you know, if you have a phone that's been cared for, you can sell it and get most of the money towards the upgrade. So to me, it was a moot point to spend the money to get a much better camera. And then I was able to sell off a compact camera that I had because they didn't need it anymore.
Yeah, and that, so the at any rate, the rumor mill now going full speed.
Yes.
And it's something that we'll have to keep our eye on. But it's good to know that you are excited about it. I'm moderately excited about it. I'm always distraught because I just think it's too fast. I've reached the age where technology marches ahead too fast. And we have run out of time for the first segment. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, I want to bring Aviva Rubin in and start this conversation of mommy blogging. I'm Steve Dotto, and you're tuned in to Dotto Tech.
Dotto Tech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. You're listening to Dotto Tech, brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you.
Mommy blogging has become a phenomenon across North America, really across the world. According to Mashable, there are some 4 million mommy bloggers currently in the world. Mommy blogs, of course, are women writing about their lives, doing what they do best, talking about their kids, talking about what interests them. I have online with me from Toronto, Aviva Rubin, who's just written a really nice piece for the Globe and Mail about the rise of the mommy blogger. She was at a recent conference down in New York City, I guess, where thousands of mommy bloggers converged. Thanks for spending some time with us, Aviva.
No problem. Thanks. Nice to be here.
Are you a mommy blogger?
Well, I am a blogger and I am a mommy, but I don't think that I would define myself exactly as a mommy blogger. I don't actually blog about my life as a parent, although I do write about parenting, and the works that I've had, the stuff that I've had published over the last few months has all been about my kids and about parenting. So I don't know. I guess it's hard to know whether I actually fit in the definition of mommy blogger.
Well, and I guess that's the thing. That when we think of mommy bloggers, we're thinking of these few women who have really become phenomenons. There are some that are followed. They have just rabid followings, and they're actually making a pretty good living from it, to the point that marketing companies are focusing on reaching that mommy blogger community as a way of reaching their constituency.
In fact, I would say that retailers are not only focusing on the mommy bloggers that are incredibly successful, although they are focusing on them. They're focusing on a lot of mommy bloggers. And I had a few conversations in writing the article for the Globe and Mail, one of them with a toy company called Spin Master, who does a bunch of really popular games. And I also had a conversation with Walmart, who has dedicated staff dedicated to social media. And the woman I spoke to said they're going to be sending out hundreds of backpacks, like back to school backpacks, and also $50 gift cards to, you know, about 300 women that are on their list of mommy bloggers. So these are, you know, they'd want these women to be to comment on their products on their blogs and tell other women who read them, you know, how much it is that they can get for a $50 gift card from Walmart. So, you know, I think that it really goes beyond that top echelon of mommy bloggers that are, you know, managing to kind of live off of their blogs in some way, and expanding out to, you know, to include thousands and, you know, thousands and thousands of women.
Now, the I guess the whole phenomenon of mommy bloggers, I'm trying to think why mommy bloggers became the phenomenon that they've become. And I guess part of it is the issue of the lifestyle of a working or of a mother, especially of a stay-at-home mom, who has some time at different, and has these different unique holes of time that they perhaps used to fill by going to meet at babysitting clubs or speaking with their friends on the phone. They're now turning to the internet and they're blogging, be it on Facebook or they're doing their own blogs. They're turning there to have their, basically their communication and sharing with adults. I remember when my kids were little and my partner stayed at home, you know, she always really looked forward to that adult time because she was so tired of kid time. Maybe the mommy blog is kind of filling in that adult time for these mothers.
I think that's true, and I think there's a real coincidence of, and the, you know, the rise of the internet and sort of this platform where you can communicate really easily beyond just your own geographical location, and build communities of like-minded people. I think it really piqued people's interest, and I think that. I don't think anyone who started off in the sort of mommy blogging world, you know, 9 or 10 years ago, you know, with the real early adopters had any intention of trying to make themselves a big living off of it. It was just like, wow, I can tell other people, you know, about my experiences. I can talk about what's going on with my kids, what's frustrating me, what's really hard, what's really upsetting, what's really great. And I think that, and I think that it just sort of grew from there. And then, and now we have that ability, like, and it costs us really nothing to do it, to set up a blog and just start talking to people. And I think a lot of people started out just talking, wanting to communicate with their own friends and family. Like, oh, here, look at pictures of my, you know, Junior doing whatever.
Yeah.
And it grew from there.
Now that brings up the you mentioned of pictures. That brings up the question of privacy and what's appropriate communication with these. And one of the things that I wonder about is, especially as I watch these reality TV shows where people get their families and their children involved in their money-making ventures of reality TV. I'm wondering how the kids are reacting and are going to react as they move ahead of having a, what would be an internet famous mommy as their mommy blogger, if they're being identified and what it does to their privacy and how the kids react.
I think that's a question that's really being discussed. It was certainly a panel topic at the Blogger conference last week in New York, because of course most of the mommy bloggers are, you know, I would say the majority of the mommy bloggers are talking about their kids, often putting up pictures of their kids, you know, as well as their families and other stuff. So the question of, you know, is this a problem? When is it something that we need to address? When should we listen to our kids if they're saying to us, you know, I don't want you to be talking about me online anymore? How much of it is sort of us talking about our own lives and telling our own stories, as opposed to trying to tell the kids' stories? And I just read such a beautiful piece. There's a blog that's actually incredibly popular called Her Bad Mother. Yes. She's Canadian. Her name is Catherine, and she's just moved to New York recently to work for for Babbel, which is a website for parents. But she and her piece that she did is called "All the Blogs a Stage on Strutting and Fretting Our Virtual Lives." And also Honey Boo Boo. So that's the title. And I people who want to, you know, have this discussion should read her piece because it's really beautiful. She certainly does ask those questions, and questions herself around the information that she's putting out there. But she does conclude that, you know, blogging is still a very different thing than reality TV. Like, you're not pushing your children to perform, you are kind of commenting on their lives and, you know, in some ways their, you know, certain performances that they might, you know, do and, you know, at home and that kind of stuff, but you're not setting it up, you know, as in the extreme case of Honey Boo Boo, where they're just like loading her up with, you know, whatever, kitty crack and, you know, and letting her do her thing. You know, this is more, you know, women that are telling their own stories. And I think that's really the distinction that she makes, that we're not trying to tell our kids' stories. We're sort of talking about our experiences, and our children are a big part of our life experiences. So I think that said, you obviously have to be cautious, and there's going to be a whole continuum of the kinds of, you know, probably from appropriate to inappropriate things that even bloggers are putting out there about their children and their family lives.
Why do you think we picked this one group of bloggers? Because there's bloggers on every topic under the sun and every demographic and every age group. Why don't we have a senior blogger as a catchphrase, or a, you know, why has mommy blogger become such a phenomenon? Is it just because we're surprised that women are technically adept enough to produce blogs? I don't understand why, you know,
I don't think it's that group. Because I think before the term mommy blogger hit, there were certainly a lot of women blogging. There are political bloggers and economic bloggers and, you know, social science bloggers. So, I mean, I think that it's not that. I think that it's, And I also think that there probably are upcoming groups of maybe slightly less senior bloggers, but I think they're coming. My father's 81 and he blogs. He started blogging before I did.
Yeah, we don't hear the term gray blogger.
Sorry?
We don't hear the term gray blogger.
I figure sort of all of this stuff is coming, and as we age, mm-hmm. we will continue to blog, and then we will be part of that demographic. But I think that I think the thing about wanting to tell our stories, and about the fact that, I mean, I'm sure that many women documented many of their stories through journals in the past, but we don't have access to those as much. And I think that people feel compelled to, as an outlet, partly as a mental outlet, as a mental health outlet, to write about what they're going through and their experiences. And if you look at, most of the top bloggers, the ones that get the most traffic, are really talking very much about their personal lives and sharing things that other people, here in this case, other women can relate to. And that is, I think, incredibly compelling. And I think that, people are isolated in many different ways. They're isolated in terms of their own experiences, whether you're raising children with disabilities, or you're a queer mom living in a small town in Canada or the United States. Like, there are all sorts of reasons to reach out. And I think that blogging gives us that possibility. And I think the first goal in the blogging was building community and sharing stories and sharing experiences. And I think from there it just kind of exploded. There's also on top of that, the current economic sort of situation, that there are pretty difficult times, and then you've got a real incentive to try to get retailers to pay attention to you and let you try, their products for free and comment on them. There's this whole couponing phenomenon women are working really hard in their local communities and nationally to get put out the word on, what Walmart or their local Piggly Wiggly or whatever are, selling cucumbers for today. And supposedly, women who are, the primary shoppers for their families are, taking this information and cutting down the food and clothing budgets of their families by reading these blogs. So I think that there's all sorts of different things that are, that are going on driving it.
Well, thanks for your time, Aviva. Aviva Rubin's She's Not a Mommy Blogger blog is at nothinginmoderation.ca. It's not a mommy blog, but it is a pretty darn interesting read at any rate. Thanks for your time, Aviva.
Oh, thank you so much.
Dottotech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Do you have a comment or question for Dottotech? Visit our website at dottotech.com and click on Contact Us. Dottotech is brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Now, back to Steve.
John Beeler is still with me, having listened to my conversation with Aviva Rubin. Now, John, you're pretty engaged in the blogging community. Your own blog, quite successful. All things that you're interested in, very geek-centric as far as...
geeky technology, photography.
Photography, yeah.
A little bit of travel. Yeah.
But a pretty rich blog. When you started to do your... How do you gauge the success of your blog? Do you look at it as just a personal project that you don't really care how many people look at it? It's more like a journal of your life? Or do you actually say, oh, I wish I had more people visiting, or I'm really happy with this kind of traffic?
Well, it's interesting. I started my blog because I had a lot of friends that kept asking me how I would do a specific thing in tech.
Yeah.
Hack a TiVo or, do various technology types of things that I was doing when I first started. And I got tired of telling them the same thing over and over again. So I decided, well, I'll write it down somewhere online and point them to it.
Yeah.
And then that got picked up by other people that weren't my friends. And it was like, oh, okay, well, maybe I should sort of put some effort into it, And then you build it up, and then all of a sudden it starts sort of chugging down that track by itself. And, I started, covering my sort of forays in DIY photography and that type of thing. And then camera companies started contacting me because they were interested in what I was doing and how could they help me get the word out about this cool thing that they were doing, and that type of thing.
So a conversation begins.
Exactly. Yeah.
So now And this also led you to involvement. So your own blog is quite successful, but you're also kind of the undercover blogger, as it were, for one of the really successful local blogs, Miss 604.
Yeah.
And you do and you cover some of the events that she can't get to, and she and
That's
you
right.
do take a lot of the pictures for the site and give her some direction in those areas as well.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. I'm a guest blogger when she can't be in two places at once.
And that is, for our area here, one of the most successful blogs. As far as regional blog goes.
I would think so, yeah.
Yeah. So if you're just starting to get into doing blogs, what do you recommend? How do you recommend people start? Now, I always think that a lot of people blog that don't even know they blog, because
absolutely,
if you're writing constantly doing Facebook posts and you're writing more than just, that's a nice picture, Steve, you're probably blogging.
Yes.
You're doing the same process.
Yes.
You're creating a diary of thoughts.
And that's really the how it all started. It's a diary of what's going on.
Yeah.
And so a lot of people, they start with a free online service. So there's like blogger.com, wordpress.com.
And those are the two that really jump out, right?
Those are the main ones that most people know. And the nice thing is with those platforms is you can start yourself there, and you can have like wordpress.com/Steve's journal. And then as you sort of figure out your voice and you start going, then you can go and get stevesjournal.com and have it point back to your account.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, maybe you'll host your own domain and you know, build an empire like Rebecca did with Miss 604. You know, those types of things. It all happens sort of organically. And it really gives you an idea by starting up with the free stuff what's involved, because you don't have to do any of the work to set it all up. You just sort of pick for some templates and you just literally get in there and start writing.
Yeah.
And you can even cut and paste right from Word or from Facebook into WordPress. So you only have to write once, and you can even get a little fancier and just do it once and it goes to both places. And
yeah.
That type of thing. So and that's the big thing, is these platforms really take away all the extra work that you have to do. You can just focus on the writing.
So the first thing is, if you are a person that wants to share, that has to tell people the same thing over and over again as you did. And that's what I actually do an awful lot. I do my videos.
Yep.
And now people say, what about this product? I say, just go to my site. Our site, the Dotto Tech site, is really a blog site. It's just a series of posts.
Right.
Now it's done in a little more advanced content management system, but it could just as easily be done in WordPress. Probably not in Blogger, but certainly in WordPress.
Yes.
As we end up using Drupal in our site. But so if you are inclined to want to look into it and to decide that you want to start writing, I recommend people start with WordPress, because the main reason is there's more upside. I think that if you learn to use WordPress, even just in the free site, you're starting to learn their style of posting and their style of editing a document and subscribing and all of that, and uploading all of your content. That makes it easier down the road, because what happens is you end up being, eventually, if you become popular, people say, well, you write a blog for my site and that sort of stuff. They might give you access as a guest blogger. They're probably using WordPress. Then you've got all the skills. You've developed a set of marketable skills as you've started to tell your story.
I should point out, though, using WordPress or Blogger, if you can write an email or use Facebook, you can use WordPress or Blogger. I mean,
yeah.
it's pretty straightforward.
It isn't difficult. You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
Now, when you start adding other things, like when you start making all of your blog posts automatically go out as a tweet,
yes.
and that, you know, or the
start
title
adding
as
plugins
a tweet.
And additional little elements to build that out. Yeah, absolutely. The other nice benefit about using something like WordPress.com is There's I don't know what the current number is. We probably can go and look at it, but it's millions of blogs are on WordPress, and they all get flowed through the WordPress.com system. So as soon as you hit publish, you can have your content sort of flow through their system, and other bloggers might see it as part of the sort of the WordPress flow. And so you instantly have access to a lot more eyes than you would if you just sat in a room and wrote it in a journal and put it in your desk.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot more eyeballs, and then Google will pick it up, and it sort of gets it's out there and it gets lifted up automatically.
Which is where you have to make determination. Is this something that you want to share with the world? What does success look like for you? Is
Absolutely.
This just a private journal that you want for you and your family? Or do you want it out there? Do you want to risk the engagement of the general population? Because along with adoration and possible riches will come.
There's
will
all
come.
Kinds of negatives.
Yes.
Once you start getting popular, certainly you'll get people coming and trying to take you down a peg or two, or questioning your motives and doing all the types of things. And really, you're just trying to have fun and try to share some of your knowledge. And so there's always the negative aspect when you put something out there.
Well, and that, you know, when we were in the conversation about mommy bloggers, about what a big business that has become, that's where we're starting to see the ethical conversation coming in. I spoke with Aviva about the ethics of sharing your kids and talking about your kids. But there's also, I think, a bit of an editorial ethic that people have to determine is exactly how much do they want to be journalistic and try and maintain those principles versus beneficial. In other words,
yes,
you know, they're going to be sending me a whole bunch of free gack. If I say nice things about them, I'm going to say nice things yep. about them. What's the harm?
Yep. Yeah, and so that's where you sort of have to draw the line. How are you going to represent that conversation or interaction with that company or brand, if you will? Mm-hmm. And when I do it on my own blog, I try to sort of like, here's my experience with this. I don't play favorites. I try to be unbiased. It's hard not to be biased mm-hmm. to some degree,
sure,
because you're being wined and dined, if you will.
Sure, they're giving you something,
yeah.
and you're talking to the product managers. They're listening yep. to you, so there's an engagement.
But a good blogger will have a sort of terms of engagement, and mm-hmm. they'll have a sort of an internal rule set of how do I want to be presenting myself in conjunction with this particular brand. How do I want to show what I've done with this brand? You know, if I was given a car by a car company, you know, do I disclose that? Or, you know, like you sort of have to think about all the implications of presenting yourself this way. And definitely that's where some of the negative stuff can start coming out when people start wondering, why are you doing this all the time with this particular company?
And I think that caveat emptor is there as well, because when we look at any media today, whether it comes mainstream media or in supposedly journalistic media or blogs, there's always going to be a bias
yes.
attached. So we as consumers have to look at it from that perspective. And so when you're searching for a review of a product, if you find a blogger that's written a glowing review and you haven't read any of the other of that blogger's content,
yes.
that review isn't worth very much. You have to know what that person's style is. You have to know what their values are. So if you're following one person on an ongoing basis or several people, then it gives you a lot better handle on
absolutely.
Whether or not you should be taking their advice.
But sometimes, though, like especially like I like to think that I'm not the first one to talk about something, but I'm definitely an early adopter about a lot mm-hmm. of stuff. And I hope that people trust that I'm going to represent that product and service properly and have all my facts straight. It doesn't always happen that way because yeah. people want to be the first and they may not have had enough time playing with that product or service or whatever. And so it's kind of a skewed view of that world. And then they can choose to write positive or negative about it, depending on maybe how they were treated by that particular brand.
Sure. Yeah.
And so there's all kinds of things. And that's why, I mean, a good blog has a following. It's a bunch of people that trust that voice to be the same. It's a little more challenging though, when you're just Googling something that some new product is like, well, I only found one review about it. So is that a good review or a bad? It's all, again, it's always goes back to the reader or the visitor. You just need to sort of like make sure you understand where this person's coming from.
It could be a paid review where they've
absolutely.
Been paid to do that. When you look at blogs, the thing that I look for is interaction, is if they're getting a lot of conversation going back and forth. So
yes.
So somebody might have a lot of followers, but if they've got a lot of intelligent conversation following their posts, I think that they are people that are right together and with it.
Well, and they've also attracted the right type of audience too.
Yeah.
You look at some blogs and all of their comments are like YouTube comments. They're just all negative or really, yeah. you know, really bad comments versus the quality review sites that have a solid, like actual constructive criticism and that type of thing.
And you should be warned, if you do decide that after listening to this conversation that you're going to become a mommy blogger or a blogger, period, that there's a new spamming phenomenon out there, which is spamming blog posts in the comments fields. I don't know if you get it very much on yours, but several of the sites that I work on, I get no valuable comments whatsoever. We put up posts. I mean, it's, you know, for a theater site I'm putting up, you know, the upcoming show, and there'll be like 30 comments. None of them are about the show because the show hasn't even come on, been produced yet. It's just people putting in these, I don't know how they make money from it, but it's a type of spam,
yes.
just like email spam coming
yep.
through.
Yeah, and there is services that you can plug into your blog to prevent and vet that to some degree, just
yeah.
like you have your filters on your Gmail and that type of thing.
Yeah,
but that's a little bit more of an advanced conversation. But
I got to get better filters because it is driving me nuts these days. Because they all come because you when you set up your blog, you set it up so that your email receives a notification of all different
yes.
posts coming in, and that's where most of my spam comes from now. Is from
yep. Yeah, and that's why things like having to type in that really hard to read
CAPTCHA
image, those things prevent a lot of those systems from doing. There is more advanced ones that do get past that stuff, but it gets the low hanging fruit definitely for sure.
Here's what we're going to do for the rest of it. Are you ready for this, Art? We're going to have some fun. John's brought in some gadgets and some gizmos that we're going to talk about. He's playing with a lot of pretty cool technology, and in one thing that I'm just really excited about. So we're going to take a quick break. While we're on the break, I know this isn't going to help anybody on radio, but let's fire up the video camera so that people online that come to the website can see this stuff. Can we do that, Art?
I can do that.
Okay. I'm going to take a quick break. Art Factor is going to fire up the television side of this radio powerhouse that we work in. John Beeler is going to be showing us some gadgets when we return on Dottotech.
Dottotech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. You're listening to Dottotech, brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you.
Art Factora helping us get our funk on. Thanks, Art.
So clever.
You got the white belt happening today? And shoes?
No, just the shoes. I can't find the white belt yet.
You got to get yourself a white belt to go with those white shoes you have. Art does have the white shoes. I've seen him wearing them. Do you wear them on stage?
I have, actually, on Saturday I did. People love them.
Well, you weren't doing your comedy routine on Saturday, though.
No.
Yeah, you were just hosting. Were you emceeing? Did you emcee the
No, event? I just had to do a quick intro.
Oh, okay. John Beeler is also in studio, and enough about blogging. Let's talk gadgets. you brought in, you tell me about it.
Basically, it's called the BioLite Camp Stove, and what it is it's a metal cylinder that you can put fire into and then attach the...
Well, you can put fuel into and set it on fire.
Exactly, yes. Yeah, and then there's a little orange thing attached to the side of it. And basically what it does is it converts the heat from the fire.
Yeah.
And it sort of keeps a little battery going in here that there's a USB port on it. So when you're camping, like I was this past weekend, you can put the sticks and twigs and bits and paper, whatever you have in there. And it's a trickle charge, but you can charge any USB device anywhere in the world.
That is so cool. Now let me just take a look. So basically it has a battery in the charging unit itself, which is what it keeps. So
yeah.
It converts the heat into electricity.
Yes.
And then it stores the electricity in the battery, and then that battery then trickle charges your device. So it'll charge when it's not burning, as long as the battery still has a charge in it?
Yes. The thing is that basically you have to get a fire going, mm-hmm. and then you press the little power button on the side there.
Okay.
And then it'll start a little tiny fan inside that will actually draw even more air into the fire chamber.
Okay.
And then it'll start off orange, and then when it goes green, it's ready to charge. And so as long as you're keeping the fuel going in it, it'll keep charging as long as you keep doing that.
First question, where did you find this thing?
I found it online, of course, and I ordered it. They had a sort of a big announcement earlier in February of this year, and they took pre-orders, and I think I got it.
Was this a Kickstarter thing?
It seems like it would be a perfect thing for that, but it's actually from a real company.
Oh, okay.
And they actually have a larger version of this for third world countries. It's actually like a full-on oven that will do even larger devices and more power. So,
okay.
But yeah, so this is the little portable one. So when the zombie apocalypse comes, I'm ready to charge my iPhone.
How much was it?
I think I paid $129 for it.
$129. Trickler. So here's the beauty. Now, I don't think that if you're camping in golden ears, you're necessarily going to want to be able to... You probably don't have your iPhone. You probably don't have a cell signal.
There's no cell service where I was this
However,
week. Yes.
Your iPhone's with you. It is your best camera.
It is.
Because it's with you.
Exactly.
And if you're doing a lot of video and stuff like that, you can quickly run out of charge.
Yes.
It's easy. Especially if you forget to turn off the radio and it's polling and looking for radio, and all of a sudden you wake up the second day of your holiday and your iPhone's dead. And now all the good pictures are happening.
That's exactly what happened.
Okay.
Exactly what happened. I left the phone on because it just sits there and tries to connect to the network all night. Doesn't. Dies. You wake up. You start cooking breakfast, and it is a stove. You can actually put pots on it. It's got these little...
It's going to take forever to cook anything. It's a pretty tiny little stove.
But the flame gets up to like this. Like
oh, really?
I mean, the fan really helps. It really like...
it draws air in. But then you're going to be having to be feeding in fuel all the time, too, because it'll go through fuel like crazy.
There's a million twigs around your campfire, though.
Oh yeah, twigs. You could probably burn
pine cones.
Pine cones. Yeah.
I did take the axe and chop some little smaller pieces from some of the bigger chunks of wood that we had.
Yeah, because you can't put a. You're not going to be using cords of wood. You're going to have very small pieces of wood for it to burn.
Yes. But even when you have a bigger chunk of more dense fuel, it does work better and last longer.
Okay. And you're not worried about it's well insulated. You're not worried about the plastic bit being so close to
it's
the fire.
It's actually got like a little fire blanket around itself. And it's pretty insulated, and it's really easy to take it apart. And you can basically put this in the dishwasher if you wanted to.
Yeah.
And then this you just sort of keep clean. It will even work in a light rain because it's kind of protected and stuff like that. So if it's raining and you're trying to cook breakfast and charge your phone,
I could see making a pot of coffee on it. I could see that.
Boil water, no problem. Yes. Yeah. And we cook marshmallows on it, hot dogs.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Did you do the octodogs?
No.
Do you know how to do an octodog?
No.
This is a skill. Do you know how to do an octodog?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
So Dottotech is not just about technology. It's also about fun food. You take your hot dog and you skewer it down the middle, you know, in the middle, so that, you know, it looks like a T with the skewer.
I think I know where you're going with this now.
And then what you do is you just take a knife and you cut one slice and a second slice on each end so that you have like four little legs on each end. And then as you cook it over the fire, the fat and the hot dog bends the things and you end up with an octopus hot dog, which looks very cool and is far tastier than a standard hot dog. The thing is, you're getting more smoke into the fat area at the center of the hot dog. I'm a little bit of an expert on this. We were doing octodogs all season. Because of how wet it was this year, we were able to have campfires at the lake this year. So we were going campfire nuts with marshmallows, and octodogs were very popular.
I bet.
And it's also good for holding condiments. You can actually put them on. Are you impressed, Art?
I think it was a Food Network show that showed exactly how to do it. And yes, it said that when you put it on the bun, you stretch it out like an accordion.
Yeah.
And then you can put like relish and ketchup and mustard without, or onions, without it spilling out.
Because it encapsulates within it.
Genius.
Or it just getting the extra smoke into the octodog makes it worth it. You want to go camping again.
I do. And this does generate a fair amount of smoke. So.
Oh, good.
This would be perfect for that application.
It's not healthy. It's not good for the environment, but it's cool.
Yes.
And what more can we ask?
Yes.
That is a sweet product. I really like that. We've got a photo of it up on the website. We'll that people can drop by and take a look at. It's the BioLite.
BioLite.
About $129. And as soon as Art saw it, he says, "I want it."
Can I tell you a story?
Yeah.
So I was on my Facebook over the weekend, and as we said earlier in the show, a mutual friend, Miss 604, had posted the picture of them camping with this device, and I was like, cool, I really want this. And my entire place is full now of, and it was always full, of just useless gadgets. Or not useless, but interesting gadgets. And I thought, this is my new next gadget. And my girlfriend's like, oh God, here we go. And she's like, let me see. She's like, you're never going to use this. It's not about ever using it. It's about how cool it would be if you ever needed it.
And then
it's here 2 days later.
And you didn't know that, John. Was that your photo on Miss 604?
Yes.
Okay. That was your camping
trip. She retweeted my Instagram photo that I posted as soon as I had cell service again.
This is fate.
Yes. You're meant to have one.
That should be mine. You've already used it, John. You don't need it anymore.
I'll sell it to you right now.
I'm in.
Okay. Yeah, so you know what we're turning into? Have you ever listened to those Prairie Radio shows, which is on Saturday morning?
Tradio?
Where I've got four tires to sell, and they're snow tires for a 57 Buick, and
take your white shoes for this.
Well, I can throw
what
them
size,
in.
What size are the shoes? Let's get back to technology briefly if we can today. I want you to tell me about the Raspberry Pi, because I've been hearing about it, reading about it, and it sounds so cool, and you're playing with one.
I actually have two. And they had a huge amount of interest when they first announced this thing.
So let's tell people what it is first.
Absolutely. It's basically a $35 computer. And it's not something like it's fully packaged and everything like that. It's literally the circuit board that's inside a computer. But this little tiny circuit board, they call it the credit card computer because it's about the size of a credit card.
Mm-hmm.
And it basically has a 700 megahertz Linux computer all on there. It doesn't come with a keyboard, doesn't come with a mouse, doesn't come with a screen, but it's just the brain, the CPU part of the computer.
And the operating system is in ROM?
It's on an SD card.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and so you can basically swap operating systems by swapping SD cards.
So it's got an SD card reader. SD this card little reader. Thing that's about the size of a credit card.
Yes. And it has HDMI ports, so you can plug it into your TV.
Oh, so it's got video capabilities built into it as well.
Yes. So you can plug it into a TV. It's also got an RCA video out, so you can plug it into an old TV. You can plug an Ethernet cable into it, so you can have internet. And it's got two USB ports on it, so you can plug in a mouse and a keyboard, or a Wi-Fi adapter, so you can have wireless internet. And
probably a hard drive for a lot of people too, right?
Yeah, if you want, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. SD cards are pretty cheap now. You can get them pretty big. So.
Oh yeah. So that would be a good alternate for memory. Since okay, and it's got a single SD card reader. Or is it dual?
Single?
Oh, okay.
It's a single. Yeah.
Okay. And so there's room for the operating system plus some files.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
And then there's
how big an SD card do you have with it?
I have a 16 gig SD card on it.
Oh, okay.
And the operating system's only a couple of gigs. So.
Oh, okay. Because I was thinking I've got a 64 gig card. Yeah. That'd be more important.
But the nice thing about it is because it's network connected, you can actually plug it into your TV, in behind the TV, plug it into an Ethernet cable, get a wireless mouse and keyboard. You can sit on your couch and you can stream videos over the internet from your network, from your other big computer.
Because it's HDMI.
Yes.
Oh.
And there's a lot of media center applications for this thing.
It wouldn't there be, yeah.
And it's $35.
That's ridiculous.
Yes.
But it's just a motherboard. It's got no case around it. So people are finding, so this is starting its own culture of people basically using this as a smart controller for everything.
Absolutely. This actually is what they consider to be the developer release phase of the Raspberry Pi. Mm-hmm. It will be available in a proper case and package and things like that down the road. But this is really to get some of the you know, nerdier and geekier types like us, our
like
hands
you.
On it. Okay, like me. On our hands in it now and eventually build some of the software that people will be using with it so that when you do buy it, it'll come prepackaged with everything on an SD card and you just plug it in and you're good to mm-hmm. go. So, but it was really designed for schools to help get students interested at a really low cost and into computer programming, into, you know, embedded electronics, electronic engineering, those types of things. So the whole science, technology, engineering, that type of stuff. So, and for $35, literally every student could probably get one.
Yeah. And at 700 megahertz, it's about the same power then, I guess, of our current generation of smartphones.
Yeah, your average smartphone. Yeah.
But I guarantee you, a lot of people listening today at home have computers that are 700 megahertz
yes.
to a gigahertz at home PCs that still work just fine.
Yeah, and the operating system that it does come with does have everything that your Windows would have. It has a browser. It has all that type
so
of stuff.
So it's a Linux-based operating system.
Yes.
Is it like Ubuntu? Is it close to that? Or
it's similar. It's a Debian variant.
Okay.
Although there's every day there seems to be more versions that as people have it to play with, they sort of build on it and add more features and functions to it. You can plug a webcam into it and use it for Skype, you know, mm-hmm. under Linux, that type of thing.
And other basic Linux apps like the word processing suite.
OpenOffice,
that'll all work. And,
yep.
and other web browsers, I guess you could probably get a Firefox for it. Or
I think there's a special build of Chrome for it now, too.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's still really early days. It literally has only been available to people in mass quantities in the last month or two. But they're shipping apparently like 4,000 a day and more, you know, so.
So what is John Beeler doing with his two Raspberry Pis?
Well, I loaned one to our
friend. Or are you allowed to say?
I'll say because it's kind of fun. I want to build a photo booth with it. I want to plug in a webcam and I want to create and probably a printer. I haven't decided if I'm going to do it just digital or if I'm actually going to print off something. You'll be able to walk up to this thing somewhere. I don't know where I'm going to use it yet. It's something I had in mind I want to build. You press a big red button that I have. It's a giant big button like a whack-a-mole and it'll take your photo like a photo booth and then it'll digitize it like the old ASCII art that you saw back in the 80s on the computers. And me as a kid.
So you're going to put one filter on it to make it retro.
Yes. So basically it'll take the image, the webcam image and digitize it so that it's built out of letters.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom got a photo of my sister and myself and she had it printed on a cloth calendar thing.
I remember those. Yeah.
And that's what I want to make with this little retro thing because it's so cheap and it's fun and I think it'll be a fun thing. I do a lot of events, so this would be kind of a fun thing that people have walk up to and take an old school photo of themselves with.
Now you said you have another one that you've lent to somebody?
Yes.
And what are they doing with it?
I don't know yet. I haven't heard back from her.
Oh, okay.
She was Jillian Shaw. Our
friend. Oh, Jillian.
Yeah,
oh,
she wanted to play with it, and she ordered one, and it's about a 10-week waiting period to get them. So I loaned her one of my extra ones.
Well, she's back on next month, so I'll hit her up about Raspberry.
Grill her about that.
I don't know if Jillian's going to be quite technical enough to build something herself. She's going to get somebody else to build it for her.
I did give her an SD card that was preloaded for her.
Though, oh, okay.
So she can at least boot it up.
She's going to have some fun. Well, we'll put her to the task, and we'll make. She might be really embarrassed that we do this, but that's okay. We'll survive that. So what are the most creative uses that you're hearing people? Obviously, people are building media centers out of it. That does sound like $35 set-top box that you can stream movies.
Yeah, it's basically like an Apple TV without the nice little package, right?
Yeah.
And there's an XBMC, which is the Xbox Media Center app. It's a free app that lets you, you know, stream all the online services and that stuff, type of stuff. Like, you can actually put Netflix and stuff on it, that kind of thing, right?
Okay.
So those types of things that people are using. There's actually a special build that you can get on an SD card that just boots up as a media center. And so that's one application. A lot of people are using it.
Where does the power come from for it? Is it USB?
There's a USB port just for power. Yeah.
So you plug a USB at, like a power supply like you'd have for your phone.
A micro USB, exactly.
So exact same as you'd have in your phone. And there's no other power supply.
No.
Wow.
No.
You could use it with the Fire thing.
You could.
Oh, yeah. You could power it from the Fire thing.
I certainly could, yeah.
The BioLite.
I should try that.
But you'd still need a display. See, a lot of the power still has to go to run the display.
I have a little tiny battery-powered TV that I bought a long time ago that I could probably use, too.
Okay. So go on with some of the other uses, because I'm fascinated by this. I think I want to get one now. This I want.
Well, it's mostly just programming and Linux. Like, everything you would do with Linux, you can do with this thing, right? So a lot of people are creating, web interfaces, web servers even. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's a $35 web server, right? So that's pretty compelling. And it's a nice, robust Linux web server. So also just learning how to program. There's lots of great tutorials on how to program with the Pi. And so how to learn how to program in Linux, Python, all these other languages that sort of run the internet these days. Mm-hmm. You can do it on a $35 computer.
And it was originally designed as an educational
tool. As a teaching tool, yeah, to help get a cost-effective computer to give to kids in class in England, actually, is where it's from.
It'll be really interesting to see how the different technology programs in the province start to use it start to utilize it. It's got to be scary because it could almost take over for, you could quite inexpensively put together a computer lab.
Yes.
So that all, you know, why are you buying big expensive desktop computers in school with these? You know, if you've...
Well, and the nice thing is it's really easy to you just pull out the SD card and put a fresh one in and you've reset the computer basically, right?
So. Yeah. Fascinating. And it's Raspberry Pi.
It's PI. Yeah.
So it's Raspberry Pi, like in the Alpha Omega.
Yes.
The Greek letter, yes. Pi, for Raspberry Pi. Well, and it's $35 and a 10-week wait.
Yes.
Unless you can borrow one off John.
Yes.
I had one other question for you. I can't remember. Oh yes, we've got about 2 minutes.
Okay,
quickly.
So I bought a Nexus 7.
Yes,
which is Google's
tablet.
Google's 7-inch tablet. It's their response to the iPad, I guess. Mm-hmm. And it's about $200, and it's a fantastic little device. I have to say, I've had it for a couple of weeks now, and. It runs Android, so anything that's on the Android smartphone, you can run on this tablet. So you have access to Kindle, so if you want to read your mm-hmm. books on Kindle, Google Play Store has their own stuff, so there's all kinds of games. There's Chrome, browser.
Now, what was the price point of it?
$200.
$200, so it's really inexpensive.
Yeah, it's 8 gigs for $200, and it's $250 for 16 gigs.
Now, have you played with the Samsung Galaxy Tab?
I have not.
Okay, because that's the one that I would want to compare it to. Let me take a quick look here. So, but it's pretty fast. It's running Android.
Yes.
So, and it is the 7-inch form factor.
Yes.
And that is, John has just opened it up with a special little code. So that is this is the question about Apple. Are they going to come out with this size form factor?
Rumor is, like we talked earlier, that they are going to have an iPad mini.
Yeah.
And it's going to come around the same time as the iPhone 5.
Yeah, and so you're now, is this My iPad has become my constant companion. Has this become your constant companion, or do you use an iPad most of the time?
Well, I mean, I have an iPad as well. This is nice and small. It actually fits in a jean pocket. Not you wouldn't want to sit with it, but you know, you can actually carry it around a lot easier. And that's what I really like about it, because it's a really great form factor for reading, surfing the web, and consuming. It's also got a front-facing camera, so you can still use it for Skype. And that
so you can use it for video conferencing, and nice and fast access.
Very fast. It really...
The processor seems snappy.
It's very snappy, yeah. And it's got a really fast video card in it, so all your games and everything is I think it's one of the fastest Android experiences out there right now, at least that I've played with.
Manufactured by Asus.
Yep.
And available pretty much in most retail locations.
I've seen it in pretty much every major big box store, yeah. Although it is hard on under high demand, so
That's the Nexus, the Asus Nexus running Android.
Nexus.
John. Thank you so much for your time. If you want to read John's blog, it's at johnbehler.com. We'll certainly have a link to that, as well as links to all of the different things that we talked about on today's show. On behalf of our Factora, I am Steve Dotto. Thanks for tuning in, and we will see you next week right here on Dotto Tech.
Dotto Tech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you.